The cyber landscape is constantly evolving, creating new challenges and opportunities to defend against sophisticated attacks. At Northrop Grumman, we provide a wide range of capabilities to stay ahead of these threats. To learn more, visit northropgrumman.com/cyber.
Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vagha Maradian. Joining us today are retired United States Air Force Brigadier General Chris Inglis, a former deputy director of the National Security Agency, who now teaches cyber at the United States Naval Academy. Chris is also one of the commissioners of the Cyberspace Solarium Commission, and Josh O'Sullivan, the chief technology officer of cybersecurity firm Ardalyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
A pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for having me.
And before we get started, Leonardo DRS sponsors our global coverage, Northrop Grumman our weekly cyber report, and Fincantieri, Marinette, and Marine sponsors our naval coverage, General Atomics Aeronautical Systems our coverage of strategy, and Beretta USA sponsors our land warfare coverage. Chris, start us off. The Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, or CMMC process, was one of the Trump administration's cybersecurity priorities, certainly at the Defense Department. Katie Arrington worked heroically to try to implement it. There are some who don't like it and want to see it go away. How does the, and I should also point out, Josh, that your firm is one of the companies that under CMMC would do the certification, the security certifications for companies across the supply chain. Chris, give us your sense. We have a new administration in position now. I should note that you're one of the folks who's mentioned for a number of senior cyber jobs, including National Cyber Director. How does the administration need to think about CMMC, what comes next, especially in the wake of the SolarWinds attack by Russia?
I think the SolarWinds attack is yet another piece of evidence that CMMC is essential. It might be insufficient, but it is essential. And so for those who are hoping that it simply goes away as the fad of the month, they'll be disappointed. For those like me who hope that we actually get even more serious about it, that we invest not simply in the mechanisms, but in the culture of security by design, and then perpetrating that, propagating that through into how we actually operate these systems, I think CMMC is here to stay.
Josh, your sense on how important this work is going forward?
I think CMMC is becoming more and more essential. To Chris's point here, CMMC is more and more regulation, though, going about the maturity of your program, but it's the floor, right? And what's really going on here is we're saying, hey, we have to raise our standards, not just to have a set of checklists that maybe or maybe you've implemented, but actually now going to, trust but verify, having a third party come and give you a grade that your cybersecurity program is up to snuff, that's at a mature level. It's interesting when we look at recent events, how is it that one company can have such an outsized impact on the rest of the supply chain, right? And part of that is just simply because we don't have a clear understanding of, really what we're kind of doing here with our own programs. And so, when we look at where CMMC fits into this, it's a leveling piece that's helping us make this more of a business problem than just what's been a traditionally IT checklist problem.
One of the points, Chris, you've made is the importance of actually improving the security of the entire infrastructure, right? What are some of the things, what does CMMC Plus look like, right? As the new administration comes into office, what are some of the specific things we need to be doing to advance this state of play and to raise the overall bar?
I think once we get I like Josh's point, which is that it's a foundation and it might well be the floor of that foundation. I think once we get that in place, where the parts, whether they are kind of sets of parts that might have some fabric and breadth to them, but when we get the parts, organization by organization in place, I think what we really need to then strive for, the thing that will make the difference, is an integration of those authorities, perspectives, parts, such that we're truly collaborating. Right now, if you're a Russian aggressor, you can pick us off one at a time, and the rest of us are no more aware of that. And therefore, they don't have to be all of us. They can just be one of us. We need to get to a place where we're applying all of our insights, all of our authorities, all of our capabilities concurrently, with some degree of collective action that makes it harder for them to beat all of us at the same time. That's what I think hangs in the balance.
Josh, from your standpoint, what does that look like? I mean, you know, we were moving ahead with this, and then there was a question about the third party nonprofit board that was going to be overseeing this process, right? I mean, Katie was concerned about the profit that some of those folks might have been able to make while sitting on it, is my understanding. You know, talk to us about how the new administration has to make this better from your standpoint.
I think the new administration is rightfully so making some additional investments in cybersecurity. The question is, where are those investments going to go? You know, first, to your point with CMMC accreditation body, you know, it's basically a startup accreditation body, and is continuing to morph and grow and mature quite rapidly, right? The fact that CMMC is now within the interim DFARS rules, but it is there. As well with a couple of other rules that are also adding to additional third-party assessment by the government of compliance with NIST HR 171. This is going to stay here and grow. And, you know, I was listening to you know, Ms. Kate Arrington and John Ellis from DCMA, who's responsible for, you know, they're responsible for these HR 171 assessments, that they're seeing this shift from really this checklist mentality of, you know, once every 3 years and you're done, to really a continuum. So I think the key here is going to be under the words of continuous monitoring. For some of us, that means looking at it from a maturity perspective of how your program's doing. Also from a threat intelligence sharing perspective, you know, there's a lot we do understand about how we detect and how we understand behaviors. And there's a wealth of opportunity in how we share that. And by sharing that, enables us to be a more adaptive, responsive ecosystem, to Chris's point here, of how we respond together, you know, almost like the Borg and, you know, in Star Trek there, right? You shoot one and maybe that one goes down, but the whole organism, the whole ecosystem adapts.
You know, speaking of that whole ecosystem, right, everybody for years has been talking about the need to have closer public-private partnership at the end of the day. This SolarWinds attack was not discovered by CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency at DHS. It was discovered by FireEye, a private company that then shared it with everybody on the net and said, hey, guys, we think there's something going on. Chris, what does that, when everybody talks about what this public-private partnership needs to look like, you're somebody who's on the FedEx board, among other things, but, you know, you were talking about this when you were in the NSA, right? How to do this. What's the right approach the administration has to take, the new administration has to take, about what these public-private partnerships need to look like?
Yeah, so this particular event, kind of, its notoriety notwithstanding, may be closer to right than wrong. I don't think you want NSA to catch something that's traversing on a domestic network, because that requires NSA to be looking inside that domestic network. Similarly, I'm not sure that companies are going to be comfortable having DHS or DISA on their networks. In this case, it was caught by the owner of a network who was appropriately skeptical about whether security is ever possible, therefore took a look using some form of human and automated mechanisms to say, I'm going to catch anomalies on my baseline, and then I'm going to investigate those. Now, we could have caught that earlier. We perhaps could have tipped and cued that based upon some anomalies that existed elsewhere that got missed. But I think you're going to find in the future, if this works perfectly, if an adversary gets in, you're going to find it essentially by kind of relying upon the person who manages that network to find it. The question is whether we can stop them getting in at all. So back that up, well left of boom. And how do we actually then defend better at SolarWinds? How do we defend upstream of that? How do we deter adversaries from getting into that? But in terms of who discovered this, I don't think that actually points kind of a crooked finger at anybody else for not finding it first on FireEye's networks. It's the question as to whether you could have gotten it earlier in the supply chain.
Josh?
You know, in the most recent you know, NDAA, there was this call for establishing good cyber hygiene, both within inside the government and outside the government. And, you know, that's tagged for the defense industrial base, that critical infrastructure sector, as CMMC level 3. I'm curious to see how that grows into the rest of the federal government, into, you know, state and local government education. And, you know, what is good enough? right? How do we get the point that we can say, hey, from a third party perspective, this is good enough from a hygiene perspective? But you know, I can't agree with Chris more there that that public and private relationship. And so, what are the additional set of capabilities? And what's powerful, I think, with CMMC is levels 4 and 5 are starting to lay out some of those foundations. There's some additional capabilities inside of NIST AHR 172. And some more advanced topics of mission assurance and resiliency engineering. But fundamentally, having a capability to detect and respond and evolve your cybersecurity program is what's going to prevail. And we got to be able to do that across industry, both inside and outside of government.
Chris, folks have been talking about the dangers for a long time. The SolarWinds attack is not the worst that we've been through. Obviously, it's going to be a while yet before we fully understand what the Russians were doing. Given SolarWinds had a lot more companies than those who may have at this point been penetrated, but it certainly does, expose a vulnerability that we weren't paying as close attention to maybe as we should have. How do you get the urgency piece of this right? This is, right, the front line is, as you've mentioned on this program before and elsewhere in your preaching, right? The front line is everywhere. What has to happen for folks to take this as seriously, not just for the protection of intellectual capital and personal information, but fundamentally our prosperity as a nation depends on it, and so does our security?
Well, I think we just need to use this event as further motivation to continue forward. I think folks who've been following this closely would be right to say this is not the most notorious. It's certainly not the first. It's not even the most impactful, but it is for the moment the burning platform that people are keenly aware of. And so let's not miss the opportunity of this crisis to say, so what then should we do and do it? And then show that the benefits aren't simply the disappearance of resources, time, and energy into these digital infrastructure, but more resilient, more robust, more confident operations that run then on top of those. And if we can practice the mutual assistance that I think is required in the future, we might just find that this gets more rational and sensible and that we'll wonder why we didn't do this years before. But at the end of the day, I think it's just get on with it. I think we have long known what we should do. We should be doing that.
Josh?
I think Chris is spot on. And to add to it that, the lessons learned from how, what FireEye did there, and also to Microsoft's credit here, of what a resilient system looks like, what a resilient organization looks like in terms of the transparency, in terms of the quick sharing of indications and intelligence and the capabilities for others to detect, I thought was refreshing. And we went early on. FireEye is a partner of ours of saying, hey, look, FireEye is going to come out this better than they came into this because of the underlying set of capabilities and the way they approach things from a resilient perspective. Microsoft equally builds out with the assumption that they've already been hacked. So when something like this happens, it's very much segmented and containerized. Those set of principles, those sets of practices and approaches are things that are starting to become apparent. But, most companies aren't cybersecurity companies. Most companies really need to be experts at their businesses, not cybersecurity. And so, they need to find partners to really help them understand how to balance their company's performance with their security programs and their risk management.
Chris, let me ask you how the United States should respond. Obviously, the Biden administration is weighing a response. The president has had a conversation with Vladimir Putin where the SolarWinds attack, among other issues, were raised. What's the right way to respond, right? I mean, for some, this is a tantamount to a declaration of war. To others, including in your business, and we heard from Admiral Rogers just a couple of weeks ago, there's a fine line about what's an attack and what's a legitimate espionage operation, given that we and our allies engage in similar.
Well, I think first you'd have to acknowledge that there are several audiences. So I think you've asked that in the context of how do we respond to the Russians? And so I'll start with them. One, we need to be crystal clear in our messaging that we see this as egregious. It's disproportionate. It's impactful. It's brazen. Therefore, this shall not stand. Two, we need to then act on that. We need to bring some consequences to bear, and we should apply the full remedy, remedies available to us, not simply take a cyber shot at them, but make sure that we bring an alliance of like-minded nations to bear, that we use diplomacy, legal remedies, financial remedies, and if necessary, cyber remedies. And those cyber remedies could be as simple as we're going to expose your tools so that we remove any traction that you've got in the future. Two, there's a really important audience beyond the Russians of the American kind of infrastructure. So those who provide, resource, operate that need to know that we need to up our game. We need to be a harder target. And we need to get really serious about that. And the government, the federal government, can lead by example. I think that what I've seen the Biden administration doing thus far is doing that, doing just that. But we need to get serious about activities like CMMC, like what Josh mentioned earlier, which is running analytics on top of that, such that we know how it's actually being employed, and getting closer to true collaboration where one of us can detect something that's affecting all of us. If we do all of those things, if we message, if we act, if we prepare ourselves such that we're a harder target, we actually advance the cause. If we kind of just assume that this is the price of living in cyberspace, which an external observer might say, that's what we've been doing for 15 years, it'll be steady on and we'll have another pratfall to follow.
Josh, what do you expect to see from government, right? Because how governments respond to these things either make your job harder or easier.
Yeah, there's two kind of perspectives that have been floating out there. One is we're kind of in this twilight phase right now, right between sunrise and sun's just about growing, right? There's a lot of talk about Billy Mitchell and Project B and, the demonstration that a plane could sink a ship. And it took 20 years from that to the unfortunate events of Pearl Harbor, where that became broadly apparent. These kind of adversaries aren't supermen, they're invisible men. And so the more we can share that insight and be able to have the abilities to detect on behaviors or anomalies or indicators of compromise, but the sharing of those resources and building this as an adaptive system really will matter most, I think. And is it espionage, is it warfare? What parts of diplomacy and information, military and economic power should we use? There's certainly some policy discussions there of what will be the right deterrence in correcting these kind of behaviors. And to Chris's point, this is basic espionage. This has been done time and time again. And what we really need to learn from here is one, our maturity, and two, how do we help organizations make good business decisions that help their businesses, their organizations grow, but also help the community grow, right? And doesn't become one of these outsized impacts when one part of the supply chain makes a mistake.
Josh and Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure having both of you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Vago.
Thank you, Vago. Thank you, Chris.
Everyone is a contributor at Northrop Grumman, and every day is an opportunity to help defend our nation and our allies. Visit our careers page at ngc.com to learn about joining the Cyber and Intelligence Mission Solutions team.